It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jay here from Stretford Paddock, and this is the Devils podcast. And joining me are two of my favourite ever United fans, Alex Baggers. Hey, how
mate.
Are you?
I'm good, mate. Very good. Yeah. Very good. Good to be back. It's been a while. I've been away for a bit, so good.
And since you've been away, things have been happening, which we'll get to in a minute. Yeah. And also, Joe Smith.
How the devil are you?
Nicely done. You see, straight in with that. Why we love him. Every fantastic. Time. And you've got pieces of paper there with writing.
I've got some pieces of paper. It's what we're going to be talking about today, Jay. It's very
professional.
Interesting.
He is.
United have actually, like you said, stuff's actually been going on, hasn't it?
It's weird, isn't it? Oh. It's weird not standing outside Old Trafford in the morning going, so you've heard this story before, but
Jadon Sancho.
Jadon Sancho, he's not happening. Maybe he is. That's it. That's all we do.
But now, it don't matter that Jadon Sancho ain't happening because we've got VDBs instead.
VDBs.
And there's potential other people coming up that we're going to be talking about. It's great. It's actually proper again.
Transfer cup runneth over.
I know. It felt like I think everyone was just getting a bit fatigued with, it's transfer season, so we like talking about transfers because that's what you do. But there's nothing to talk about. And we all knew there was nothing to talk about. But each day you open the newspaper and there's still stories about Man United signing people, but you just don't have the care and the excitement and the energy because you think, well, there's always going to be stories, so we have to report on them because they are what the stories are. Yeah. But we all know that these aren't close, and how many times can we hear, no offence to Fabrizio Romano, of course, we all love him, but how many times can we hear the player wants to join United, it's just a matter of €120 million, like, we know.
We know that.
And I know he has to say, I'm not having to go at him all the way he reports things at all, but the news has stagnated around Sancho for so long, that all of a sudden,
more footballers.
But even that, Van der Beek signed faster than that.
It was so
the 24-hour transfer.
It was like,
it's not official yet.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Because it was sort of
Fleetwood Mac.
Because I thought Van der Beek was set for Barcelona or Madrid. I think with Ronald Koeman coming in, that was the rumours that's him now. That's where he's going to go. Go back with Frankie de Jong and play midfield there. That was it. And then it just kind of went, oh, United are still interested. And then we've got him. It's done. It's finished. It's great.
Yeah, it is. Sorry, I just keep thinking Ronald Koeman for some reason. Wonder what he smells like. Van der Beek, then. We've talked about him on some of the shows. We've talked about him a little bit. Alex, what do you think to him? Obviously, we're happy that we've signed someone. Yep. It's not official yet. As of the time of recording, which is only very shortly before it goes out, so hopefully not much will have changed. No. But as of the time of recording, it hasn't been officially announced. The reports were that he had his medical yesterday. Presumably past that, there was no contrary or adverse reports as to the medical. No. But what do you think of him as a signing? What do you think of the sort of the gap he fills in the squad and whether there is even a gap? Because there's some people, and we talked a little bit about it yesterday, we'll talk about it as we go on, who were saying, very expensive for a squad player. What are your thoughts on
Mickey
the signing?
Said that on, what used to be a good radio station has now just descended into clickbait drill.
We'll talk about that in a minute, but just generally, what do you think of the signing of Van der Beek? How it was done, the player himself?
He's a very good player, obviously. You know, he's stood out for Ajax when they had their run into the Champions League. He did well last season, still was ridiculous goal contribution. I think it was over 21, like 10 goals and 11 assists in a shortened season, which is really impressive for a midfielder that has played deeper. I think that, you know, you sign Bruno, you've now got Van der Beek, who both can play in sort of two different positions. Yeah. They can play deeper if you want them to. You can play a bit further forward. And the whole point of him being a squad player, I mean, you put the comparison of, look, we are competing with Man City. You know, their squad is the, you know, for as much as Liverpool did well last season, City's squad is what you kind of got to look to and go.
High watermark of
that's how good squad a squad depth. You can, that's how we used to be. Mm. Where we need two players for each position. And the fact that people are saying, oh, well, you've only got two in there. Well, look at the end of that season in the Europa League, you're playing Pogba and Bruno. They both look tired. There's no way of changing them. There's no way of saying, look, come off and have a break. Let's bring someone on.
Even within a game.
Yeah.
Subs don't even make sense, let alone starting without them.
Yeah.
Like, confidence-wise, we need players in there.
So it's putting more legs in there. I'm hoping to see all three of them on there. I think that'll be very good. With teams we're going to have a lot of the ball, I think that we can do that. I think that with the back four we've got and the work rate that those three will put in, I think that we could play with all three in some way. And I think that the quotes that have come out today is that Ollie's kind of said that to Van der Beek, that there is going to be a chance of you will play alongside Bruno and Pogba, which is interesting to see. And it'll be interesting to see, but maybe we play a couple of games as a diamond and things like that, whether we try and fit all them in there with Matic still and things like that. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the fact that, like I said, you can rest some players now. We can put some different players in, we can change things up a bit. And, you know, there's so many times where City started without De Bruyne, you go, what do you mean they're starting without De Bruyne? But you go, all right, that's because they've got Champions Bernardo Silva and that. And that's, I was mentioning this to someone the other day about the Champions League, you know, last season, the Europa League, you could play a weakened squad because the games we were playing, we are going to be the best team. There's a good chance our group has a top Spanish team, a top German team in there at least. And then we're probably going to have one game where we can probably field a weaker squad.
Assuming we didn't lose the bigger games.
And that's the other thing, is that that'll probably be our must-win game in that group. Yeah. So you're going to have to play a full-strength squad in our midweek games now. So that's another round of games that we need to play a full-strength team in. So having Fernandes, Pogba, Van der Beek is a good situation to be in.
And at the risk of unsettling you slightly here, Jay, how deep would you like things at United? Because Alex there mentioned about the depth that this allows us, and I think that's something we're missing. But do you think that we'll talk about Thiago a little bit going forward, but how much is the depth the issue at United? That sort of, we look at the sort of the point of the knife, if you like, and that starting 11 is very strong, can beat any team, we've seen that. But as Alex said there, you're in the Europa League semi-final and people are having to go at Solskjaer for not wanting to make a sub to the 85th minute. But that's because the options off the bench don't improve the team.
No, you're right. And I think Ollie's sort of done it in stages anyway with his team. He's in transfers, he wanted to sort out the defence. He brought in Wan-Bissaka and he brought in Harry Maguire for big money. And that more or less, because he's getting a tune out of Luke Shaw and bringing Brandon Williams in, that more or less sorts out your defence. Attack wise, with Martial and Rashford, he got rid of Lukaku and he had them too. And bringing in Greenwood, he sorted out the attack. Midfield, bringing in Bruno and keeping Pogba and keeping him happy, more or less sorted out midfield. The only sort of thing now is getting that squad. Like you're saying, our 11, when they're all fully fit, because when there was fatigue at the end of the season, I would fancy our chances against anyone. Mm. If you've got Manchester United fully fit, strongest 11, I'd put us up against the Scousers, against City, against any team on the planet. Yep. The only issue is, as you said, is when you get one or two injuries, the likes of when you're bringing in Pereira and Lingard, and to a lesser degree, you can maybe argue that I think Fred's had a good season, McTominay, I love him, but you know, you might argue that you suffer a bit when they come in. Because we saw how Matic is just a cut above those players in that role. But now, if you strengthen the squad and you bring in players like Odyssey van der Beek and then hopefully one or two others, then that's the next phase, isn't it? You've sorted out your 11, you've sorted out your defence, you've got your midfield sorted, you've got your attack sorted. The next stage is then, even the goalkeeper is sorting that out because Henderson signed a new deal. So the next stage is to get the squad stronger, not by signing players who are 6 or 7 out of 10, but the players like Van der Beek, who potentially is like an 8 out of 9 out of 10 player, who will come to United and want to play and want to start, and he'll feel like he should start. Yeah. You know, this isn't a 19-year-old from Bournemouth, whatever. This is a player who's been at one of the biggest clubs in Europe, Ajax, had a very good three seasons, since kicked on massively since...
No offence to Bournemouth, obviously. You hate all sort of peripheral seaside towns, don't you?
You know my feelings on that. We don't need to go into it.
Cleethorpes, get fucked.
Don't stand on them bastards at Cleethorpes. So it is the next... And like, he will come in and, like you said, Ollie's convinced him. I'm sure Ollie hasn't said to him, well, you know, behind McTominay, Fred, Matic, you're my guy. No. He won't have said that. He'll have said, you know, you can start, but you've got, you've got to obviously perform. So it's what you want to see. You just to finish on that before everyone's point is, every good United team and squad hasn't had an 11. It's had a 14, a 15. Mm. You know, you look at someone like Darren Fletcher, for example. You could argue that players like Park and Fletcher weren't even first teamers, technically. No. Mm. When everyone's fit at their peak, Fletcher probably doesn't get in the team. Park didn't even get into the 2008 final squad. I know he played in the semis. But they're almost club legends. Yeah. And that's what you need. You need very good players who are sort of make up that 14 or 15 you choose for the first team.
And this suggestion that, oh, it's a lot of money for a squad player. First of all, you don't get players that are good enough, because all a squad player is good enough to good enough for the first team. Any a good squad player, like I said, Fletcher Park, is good enough for the first team, but there's someone better. I think that's what a squad 100%. Player should be. It shouldn't be, well, you're not really good enough for Man United, but you can stick around. It's you should be good enough to play any given game, but we happen to have someone even better than that.
Yeah.
That's all a squad player should be. And Van der Beek, I think, to get a sort of player that's good enough to play for Man United against, like I said, Arsenal and City and Chelsea and any given game, or even if you've got a specific role player, like we did in Park, like we did in Fletcher, where they might play Bayern Munich or Barcelona or whatever it may be, you have to be very good, and those players don't cost 15 million quid unless you happen to get lucky or you get them when they're 17 or 18 like we did with Ronaldo. You don't get a player that can walk into Man United's first team next season on any given game for 15 quid very, very rarely, unless you're getting someone at the end of a contract.
Yep.
Like, we, you know, Thiago may be an example of that. But the idea that, well, 35 going up to 45 is a lot for a squad player.
It's not anymore.
That's how much a squad player costs.
It's not anymore, though. That's
if you want to have a good squad.
You know, the big signings now are 60 million plus. You know, 30 million, 60 million is.
Yeah, Leeds are spending 30 million on people.
Yeah, that's it. Leeds are spending 30 million on their first team. We should be able to spend that on. This is it. Like, City didn't get shit last year for signing Cancelo for 60 odd million, and he played like 25 games.
Everton paid 50 million for Sigurdsson four seasons ago, whatever it was. So, you're right.
And this suggestion as well that, oh, he's a squad player. People act as though squad players play four games a season. Fred's played 40 games a season. Mason Greenwood, who for most of the season was a squad player, a hugely talented one at that, has played the second most games for Man United this season.
55 games he's played this season.
It's ridiculous. Dan James has played 35 games. Brandon Williams has played 30 games. These are squad players. You play almost a full Premier League season, or, you know, 25 to 35 games as a squad player.
Yep.
And if anyone's playing 35 games for Manchester United, no matter how many minutes per game or whatever it is, they have to be very good.
You look at what Liverpool even, their front three doesn't change a lot, but their three in midfield, they have six players there easily. And they've got Henderson, Wijnaldum, Fabinho, Lallana played in a lot of games last season.
Milner.
So there you go. They've got six players. They did it against us in the first the game at Old Trafford, where they took off their whole midfield and put on a brand new midfield. Yeah. And it didn't. They maybe weren't Fabinho, maybe came off and Milner come on, but it's still a good footballer coming onto that football pitch. And we couldn't change three midfielders last season. And
you're right. Even now we couldn't.
You're right as well. Like, you look at the great United teams, you know, 99, Jesper Blomqvist plays 41 games in that season. 40 odd games. And wins the lot.
Yeah.
You know, Teddy doesn't play many games. I think he plays a handful, but again, he's an integral part of it. And, you know, if we aspire to get to those levels we used to be at, have to have excellent squad players, you know, and Van der Beek, of course he's that.
Like, you don't think John O'Shea was, people considered him to be
great
a squad
example.
Player.
Yeah.
He played 300 games for Man United as a squad player.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
right.
Solskjaer, he was in and out of being a first team player, but he got, what was it, 170 goals for United as a squad player? Like, squad players are...
Your favourite player, Phil Neville, was a squad player.
Yeah, but he played loads of games.
Yeah, and, you know, now there's talk of putting a statue outside.
And even in that 99 team, Nicky Butt was a squad player. You know, he was
of course he was. Everyone's fit. Like, the real reason he starts in the Champions League final is because Keane and Scholes get injured. Scholes don't even start in the Stade Alpine in the semi-final.
No.
It's, you know what I mean? All right, Giggs, Fergie mixed it up a bit.
Again,
Giggs
didn't start against Arsenal in the semi-final. Like, and that's, all these people think, oh, wow, that's ridiculous. Well, no, that's what happens. You want a big squad. The reason United did well across all fronts was that they had a big squad and could rotate it. That's why City, for the past few years, have been the only team that can win the domestic cups as well as doing that, because they can make 11 changes.
Did they lose De Bruyne, like, most of the
last season?
Yeah, the season before last
season.
And, like, still, obviously, won the league with 99 points.
Bernardo Silva,
They've got, ridiculous.
They've got Foden, who's come through the squad, who's come through the youth team, but the rest of them players, you know, Gundogan isn't a starter for them.
No.
Gundogan's
Foden
a 30...
come through the youth team. They never mentioned that.
No, they never mentioned that. Gundogan, again, they mention all these players. Mm. They signed him for 30-odd million quid, and he's a squad player for them.
Mm. But he still gets loads of games.
Of course he does.
And he can play in any game, that's the thing. So, overall then, Van der Beek, not officially confirmed yet, but it's as close as you're going to get without him holding the scarf. We're happy with the signing?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
And you think, sorry, again, do you think that sort of slightly more attacking, versatile 8-10 kind of player is what we need? Do you think we need a number six?
I thought we would maybe look at number six. Yeah. But maybe...
We don't seem to be interested in one. We've not been linked to any, have we?
Doesn't seem so.
Could Thiago Alcantara fill that role if we slightly to him?
Great. Speaking of links, great segue. We'll talk about Thiago now, shall we? In recent days, actually, coming out literally off the back of the Van der Beek deal, we've had the likes of Christian Falk and other German-based outlets reporting that United are monitoring Thiago, which is such a... Who the hell knows what that word means?
I mean,
it's weird.
For those of who don't know, obviously Bayern Munich midfielder, 29, is in the last year of his contract, or will be going into the last year of contract. So you're looking at around a £25 to £35 million fee for him. Heavily linked with Liverpool. United now rumoured to be interested and monitoring Thiago.
It could just be the let's put Manchester United in there for clicks across the internet. Let's put Manchester United in there, or maybe United, maybe Liverpool just want to do it to maybe speed up a bit, or Bayern doing the same
thing. Speed Liverpool up.
Speed Liverpool up a bit. I don't know. There's a bit of that. I mean,
You said it though. You just hit the nail on the head earlier, and we were speaking, weren't we, to Florian? I think Plettenberger covers Bayern over there for Sport Eins, and he was saying part of the problem is sort of Liverpool's midfield. They've got six options there. I think Milner's still there. I don't think he's left.
Lallana's gone.
Lallana's gone. Sorry, so maybe down to five. And he was saying that. You could look at, we've got a deliverer. Yeah, we were speaking to Florian Plettenberg from Sport Eins, who covers Bayern Munich for them over in Germany, obviously. And he was saying that Thiago would be open to move to United because he named two things. He said that United are revered in Germany as the biggest club in England, and rightly so.
Of course.
And also, he said that he may be slightly reluctant because of the amount of midfielders that Liverpool have got. And I think Plettenberg said to us, he said, oh, maybe if they sold Naby Keita, he'd be more keen to go. And I think, well, that's not going to happen. No. So I don't know. I mean, you know, Liverpool don't seem to be coughing up the dough.
There were reports yesterday saying that Liverpool would have to sell someone before they can sign Thiago.
Right.
Which is bizarre to me because they've barely signed anyone in the last 2 years. And they've surely made a shitload of money from this new Nike kit deal. Surely they made a shitload of money from winning the Champions League and then the Premier League. And yet they've got no money. I don't quite understand what's going on there. And also, the other report was that the contract demands of Thiago were ballistic and that United were like... He's up a sec. I mean, to be fair to him, he's 29. It's his last big deal.
Yeah.
You can see why he wants to get as much money as possible. But would you be into getting Thiago in, assuming he was on 290, 300 grand a week? Or, you know, that's a guess. But assuming he wants a lot of money, it's not going to be 150, is it?
It's tough, really, because I don't know. I feel like that's kind of breaking what we've been doing the past 12 months, where we've kind of got players, and you know, Van der Beek's probably on, what, I think it was 120, someone did that.
Which Bruno seems quite quaint these days, doesn't it?
Oh, like, bless him.
120 grand
Bruno
a week?
Bruno's like 80,000 a week, that. Which is,
how is that
which is ridiculous.
Possible?
And we've kind of gone away from, you know, we've kind of looked at De Gea and gone, do you know what? Maybe that's a bit much. He's maybe going to go next.
Sanchez and De Gea were bad deals. I know De Gea, we love him, but... You know.
Whereas
even Pogba was a lot.
Yeah,
Pogba was a lot. And the thing is for Pogba is our best player and he is the most marketable person for Manchester
United.
Probably
did us a bit of a favour as well giving him that deal because other clubs are probably looking at it going, not only have we got a massive transfer fee, we've got to match those wages.
So I'm kind of... Yeah, I'd like to see Thiago, but again, my sceptical thing to say is because I do think that he is one of the best players in the world in that position.
Is that good?
I think he just makes it absolutely tick.
He's a deep line number eight, isn't he? Or is a playmaking sort of...
Number
six. He sits back.
Yeah.
The one thing I worry about is... I saw some stats the other day, and I don't want to get too deep into stats because, as we know, stats mean what you want them to mean.
Well, 97% of stats are made up.
Exactly. Somebody will get that. It took me a second. But I was looking at stats, and one of the things that has always been the biggest problem for me with Fred is his ball retention, and he gives the ball away too much.
Yeah.
And I saw it in comparison, McTominay, Fred, and Matic all next to each other. Fred brings the ball out better, but Matic plays a lot more forward passes because he splits the lines with his passing. But the biggest difference is he doesn't give the ball away. And that was the thing for years with Busquets, with Scholes, with Carrick. They're not... You know, going to get in and smash the back doors off you. That's not the same. but they're not going to do that. But what they will do,
more's the pity.
What they will do is cut the ball out, and they will never lose possession in transition. And that's the thing that Fred doesn't do. He gives the ball away too much for number six. Yeah. And Pogba does the same because he's learning that position. But Fred's been there for 2 years now. We need someone next to Paul Pogba.
How much of that is shots by Fred giving away. Maybe, yeah.
But we need someone next to Paul Pogba who doesn't lose the ball, because when you're in that position and you lose the ball, especially if your centre backs are split a little bit to make play a little bit better, we're screwed. Yeah, Thiago doesn't give the ball away. That's a good thing about he's used to playing that position. But do we need someone who is a number six, who tackles, who hits hard, who can replace Matic?
That's the best midfield in the world, isn't it, by the way? If Thiago, Pogba... Not even Van der Beek.
No, yeah, Thiago Pogba,
Bruno and Pogba is the best midfield in the world.
100%.
Like,
but is it a balanced midfield?
I don't care.
They're it's never just that ball retention that
no
I'm
one
about.
Is ever going to have the ball against us, because them three are there.
That's good.
So it doesn't... Again, it's like when City have that flow of whatever. You don't need Davinson and De Bruyne to defend, because they're not giving the ball away.
No, but they do always have Rodri or Fernandinho.
I think I'd love him, but I'm scared because I think Liverpool
it's
are still
going to
get
it's mad, because if you look at that, that midfield, say you've got Thiago, Alcantara, Pogba and Bruno.
Yeah, and then on the bench you've got Matic, Van der Beek and Scott McTominay.
And then you throw that up against Scousers, who could have Henderson, Wijnaldum and Oxlade-Chamberlain. You just think, that's mad, but yeah, he's apparently looking at that going, I won't get in that team, so I could go for that one. I don't know, it just seems crackers.
I think it's that position. I think it's that number six position, because I think for them, I think if he's going to play, he's going to do that. I think Fabinho's kind of got that set for Liverpool. Yeah. I don't think he's moving out of there.
We have to decide how we want to do our midfield, don't we? That's the thing.
I think he's
going to
play with two sitting.
Are those two sitting sort of creative ball retention players, or are they destructive passing the ball through the lines players?
I think it all depends on the quality. I think a lot of it depends on the quality. Because as much as I love Scott McTominay, you put him in there, he gives the ball away more, isn't as good as that.
More than Matic, but less than Fred.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're getting a more of a feel to the sort of midfield that Pogba thrived in under Juve, aren't you?
Absolutely.
It's getting towards
that,
because it was
that was Pirlo, Marquisio, Vidal. Was Matuidi there? Wasn't then? Was he?
Matuidi, I don't think
so. Was he? And then when he left, maybe.
Yeah. Then at the France midfield, he played well. Was Kante next to him?
Matuidi next to him.
Matuidi, Kante.
He does thrive
Pogba.
With a more industrious workhorse next to, you know, Kante's. Just never stops running. Matuidi's
ridiculous.
Matuidi the same. But then, you know, Matic doesn't cover the ground, but he's defensive and disruptive like Kante and Tolisso are. Matuidi. Do we need someone like that next to him? That's mainly because Thiago's a ball player, isn't he?
There were some links to Kante the other week, because I think Lampard seems to want rid of him, or doesn't see him.
I know we got Nemanja Matic from Chelsea, so it's not beyond the realm of possibility, but I just can't see that happening.
Think Chelsea are that daft to do it. I think they made a mistake giving us Matic, not been.
But there is a chance that Chelsea need to sell some players. Yeah. Because their owners have got loads of money. Their owners got loads of money, but as we've seen with financial fair play,
who was the captain?
Kante was the captain against Brighton in a pre-season friendly. Right. I mean, it's all right when he's on the pitch, but that's half the games he isn't on the pitch. Yeah, they've spent a lot of money.
He was the captain against Brighton in a pre-season friendly.
Can you switch the camera?
Yeah.
They've got a lot of money, and they've got rich owners, but they still can't just spend what they want, because, as they know, financial fair play comes in and gives them a year ban. So they've spent $250 million or whatever it's going to be.
I think they want rid of Jorginho before they want rid of anyone else. I think he's out the door before Kante.
But they're not going to get money for him.
No, whereas Kante, they get £40 million back.
Yeah,
you get that.
They've
back.
Got like 59 players that they can just get off the books, haven't they? They've got a ridiculous amount of players who are actually Chelsea players.
Mm.
Do you remember when like they had a transfer ban that wasn't a ban, where they recalled all the loanees, and it was just like they had four squads worth.
Yeah.
And it's like, Lampard's found a gem in Mason Mount, and Tammy Abraham's like, mate, he's had like 60 players.
He's 22 years
from.
Old. He's had 4 years of like,
and some of these
football
have been,
league experience.
Like Swansea's number nine for a season, and
exactly.
Villa's number nine or whatever. It's just madness. So I don't know. I'm always a bit skeptical of what's going to go on. I mean, I love Kante, but I think that's not going to happen. I personally would love to see us get Thiago, but we do have to be cautious with those wastings, because we're still recovering from the Sanchez deal.
And it's
we
exactly
just, you know, we had to give in the money to take him away from us.
It kind of.
Take my wife.
You know, it's literally like losing Ander Herrera. We lost Ander Herrera because of Alexis Sanchez. Because Herrera went, well, I start every week, and why is he on double what I'm going to, what I've been offered?
Yeah.
So that kind of happens. Now that only takes Thiago to come in, and then Bruno go, hang on a minute. Like, I've come in here.
And I've changed the world.
I've changed the world, and I'm on a third of what Eve on. I like it here, but come on, lads, sort this out. And then that all starts. You don't know how that can...
No.
You'd have to... I mean, I don't know how these contract things work. Maybe if you did it like you got a signing on fee or whatever, massive bonus that way or whatever, yeah. or some sort of structure deal. I don't know.
But the thing is, if Bruno keeps performing, he will get a contract renewal in about 2 years where he's on 250.
And that's not in doubt, if he keeps playing.
But again, it's one of them, it's unrest very, happens overnight.
And then him
especially
go,
when it's someone coming
well,
in like
I'll
that.
Just go to PSG.
Yeah, it doesn't take long for... You know, everyone thinking, what the fuck? We brought him in. He doesn't even start. And he's on 300 grand a week. I understand that. Right, let's move on then. Speaking of Alexis Sanchez, All or Nothing, Tottenham edition, a.k.a. let's get Man United's manager on there for a few more views. honestly, right, first of all, okay, for those who don't know, Amazon Prime, All or Nothing documentary following Spurs last season. I'm sure a lot of you have seen it. They skimmed over the Pochettino era, didn't they? He's been here for 5.5 years. He got him to the Europa League final. Oh, he's been sacked. Here's Jose. Literally gone immediately. No one cares. I don't know what even that. I need that. but they were like, Jose's here, episode one. Like, I'm sorry, that happened halfway through the season, didn't it? It's like, nah, that happened at the start of this season. Tottenham didn't exist. Yeah. I love, first of all, I'm just talking here because I love it. I loved the Tottenham Hotspur are now a star-studded team full of world-class internationals. They haven't won a trophy in 10 fucking years. That world-class star-studded team with a lovely lovely stadium with a nice gold chicken on it. you've watched All or Nothing, have you?
I've only watched episode one.
I watched them all, three of them last night.
Yeah, me too.
When you were talking about it earlier. It did sort of fast-forwarded through the Pochettino era or the Pochettino beginning of the season. I'm regardless of what you feel about Jose Mourinho, he's great box office.
It's the Jose Mourinho show, by the way. For anyone who is interested who hasn't seen it, it's not about Tottenham, it's about Jose Mourinho.
And you always say no man is bigger than the club. Well, you'd argue that he probably is, because would you be watching that if he wasn't on it? Probably not. He is box office. And I'm always fascinated by Jose. I think he's a very interesting character, and even his time at United, even it's a mixed bag, because you think about that night in Stockholm and things like that, and then you think about the last few months where it was just all going tits up. Yeah. So, it's always been a bit of a roller coaster when Jose Mourinho's in town, and it's great to tell it. It's fascinating watching how he's handling different players. It's interesting, and I'm just I'm interested in how a Premier League club is run and the different things they go through. It's always interesting, but Jose and how he's handling it and the results he's getting, and it's always weird because. You know how the season goes and how these games unfold and stuff. It's how he reacts to them, and they've obviously got some characters in there, the likes of Dele Alli and
Eric Dier was big focus of one of the episodes.
I just like the first way he came in and just kind of he didn't get them all together and go, I'm Jose. Went right on the training field,
waving them out.
Just
waving,
come on lads, on you come. Yeah.
And I liked how he went over to everyone and was like, what do I call you? Who's it? Oh, Harry, because it's Harry Winks and Harry Kane.
Yeah, why did they call him that?
Okay, Winksy, because he's Harry. Yeah. I like that. I
love the reaction to
regardless
Sissoko,
of, like you said, to Sissoko.
When his assistant comes into his office and goes, so that's, Sissoko's quite a big personality in the dressing room, and he just goes, fuck.
Because obviously he doesn't want to play
him. He just goes, he thinks, fucking, I've got to play him now, haven't I? I've got to keep him around.
It was interesting what he said about Fergie, wasn't it? The only bit of advice he got of Fergie was to sign Dele Alli.
Yeah,
which I thought was a bit odd. I didn't see that one coming.
I don't know. No. I kind of, when Dele Alli first come onto the scene, you're like, he's everything that Fergie would have wanted in a player. He's got a bit of quality, but he's got that
bit of Rooney.
He's got that
dickishness as well.
He's got everything.
Which
about
when
him.
When you play for Spurs and you're watching from that side, you think, oh, he's a bit of a twat. But if he's playing for you, you don't mind the occasional studs up, the occasional elbow. You kind of want a bit of that. Yeah. So you can see why Fergie would have liked him.
It's interesting to see Jose, the way he came into Dele Alli and said that.
He's lazy in training and said it in front of everyone.
In front
of everyone. Saw it immediately. Everyone's like, get around the other side of the play. And Dele was like,
yeah.
Fuck this.
And he just literally went over to the first training session and said, you're lazy. You need to fix that. And then in the first meeting was, yes, Dele, we know you're lazy, but in this game, you aren't going to be fucking lazy. And you can see how in certain teams and in certain, if he's done that to, if Paul Pogba's taken that the wrong way, which is probably what he said to him at some point, or he said that to someone in the United squad, where they've just gone, I don't need to be here.
It was interesting, you mentioned Eric Dier, when he had that talk, and obviously Eric Dier speaks Portuguese, he grew up in Portugal, and you feel like, he said, I tried to sign you years ago, and I rate you and all this, and you think, oh, there's a real bond there, and then he takes him off after half an hour.
Again.
In the next game, and Eric Dier's just sat there like, Proper devastating.
Career is over, lads.
Mate, never get too friendly with Jose. Only goes one way.
But yeah, the way he spoke about, he said, if you do what I say, if you give, you can't give 80%, you can't give 95%. If you give 100%, I'll have no problem with you.
Yeah.
But if you do, then I'll be a bastard to you, whatever. And he said. And you can see how that would work with him, especially. And you can also see how that kind of mentality and that kind of managerial style, which, let's not forget, as much as I don't think Jose was right for United, and obviously I think when he left it was the right time for him to go, he is one of the best managers, and I was saying before, not just as a football manager, but when, you know, compare him to a manager event, like a manager at B&Q or a manager at a car wash or any kind of manager, the way you interact with people is how you manage people. He's one of the best and most successful managers of any kind in, you know, the history of the world. You know, he's he's as good as it gets. Yeah. And you watch the way he interacts with people and the way he speaks to people and the way he said to Dele Alli, I don't know what it is, you don't have to tell me, but your career did this and then did is now doing this.
Yeah.
And you think, you know, the way he approaches things and just being able to see him working, and obviously there's a respect and an interest there from a United perspective because he was the United manager.
It's interesting to me, like, as well with him and Harry Kane. Mm. He's very friendly towards Harry Kane. Sort of, he lets Harry, before the match, he's like, do you want to do a talk or shall I? He said, are you a movie star type player? I always think with Jose, he has those types, especially strikers. He tends to let strikers just get on with it. He did it with Vieira, didn't he? He's the only player that he, manager that never really had an issue with Zlatan. You know, even Lukaku, to a certain extent, he brought him in and just left him to it.
He decides that players are his guy.
And he's like, very much like with Kane, who's obviously the focal point of that team.
Yeah.
And there was never really, you could see he wasn't going to have an issue with him. He was like, you're great, you're a star.
Silent leader, all that stuff. None of this, he doesn't shout enough. He doesn't, you know, the things you could throw at Kane as a captain, he's a silent leader.
Just like, praised him and like, obviously gets him involved in the team talks and stuff. Like, I don't know, the wisdom behind that one. Yeah. To be honest with you, I don't think Harry Kane's fit for giving a team talk, let alone the team talk, but that's another story. But yeah, he's obviously on board with him. But the other one's like, because that dressing room and that club has issues.
Yeah.
Like, it was pretty toxic just before Pochettino left. You've got players running out of contracts, you've got players discipline problems, you've got, you know, just players not performing. Eriksen wanted to leave. I think both centre-backs, the contracts were up for renewal. And you just, you know, Dele Alli's had disciplinary problems, and it was like, he's sort of, he's got it all together. But as we all know, Tottenham didn't end up having a good season, really.
And you look at when he first comes in, he's talking about top four. They got within 6 points, was it?
Yeah.
Going for 3 points, and then they lost to either United or there was someone else they lost to.
I think it was Chelsea. I think it was 3 points.
Oh, yeah, they lost to Chelsea, but the emphasis was clearly on top four when he arrived. Obviously, they didn't get top four. But I like some of it how when they lost one of the... They lost to... I think it was Chelsea, or they lost one of the games, and he came in and was like, no, that's it, that happens sometimes. Like, he's not, you imagine him just screaming every time they lose, and obviously maybe that sort of, you know, bedding in period where he's coming in, he doesn't want to upset people so much so early on, like with Eric Dier. He dropped him after 30 minutes or subbed him off, and then was like, usually if I sub someone off that early, they won't play the next game. But for the sake of team spirit and my relationship with him at this point in my career at Tottenham, he played him again the next year, didn't he?
Yeah.
So there's little things like that where it's nothing other than interesting.
Yeah, no, yeah,
you're
right.
Interesting to see how he does things.
Yeah.
And you can kind of pick up on
such
where things could go wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and the way he said it to, I think he had that meeting with Harry Kane early on as well, and he said that, we should be doing better because you're a better team than I am Manchester United, and you're nowhere near where I was then. Yeah. And, you know, just for him to be that blunt
as well.
Do you
think there's an element of truth to that, though?
Absolutely.
Because when, you know, I remember, like, United, sorry, when he took over there, and I remember, like, Pochettino's last game, he had, like, Lucas Moura, Harry Winks, Christian Eriksen on the bench.
Yeah.
And at the time, we had, like, Pereira, Stein every match. Mm, I don't want to make it bashing him, but, you know, he's not...
Well, yeah, think about the team that he walked into.
That squad and our squad at that time, you know... Probably said they would have they had the better.
Well, I think
players to choose from.
Everyone looked at them this season coming in, and they signed in Ndombele, and you kind of went, you know, they could push Liverpool and City this year. You know,
everyone thought top three, didn't they?
Top three.
They got Champions League final last year,
and they strengthened
as well.
We've
never been allowed to forget. Oh, did you nearly win a title?
Yeah, and they strengthened as well.
But they strengthened. Yeah.
Yeah, it's anything like that. I mean, I didn't watch the City one because I just couldn't.
No,
I could not be.
They're too much of a rival, and we know they win.
The only thing that was good watching that was, you know, I mean? When we beat them from 2-0 up. That was the best.
I honestly haven't even seen that. I didn't even watch stats.
No. I just thought everything about that stunk. Yeah. It's just glossing over the real reason that they got took over. Absolute Pep wank fest, and I can't be doing with any of it.
And so the thing with Tottenham as well is, they've always been one of those teams that the memes of, lads, it's Tottenham and we've beat them in some good games and we don't lose to them that often. And you can, I can, whilst they're a big team, because they never win anything, you don't even feel bad watching them win the odd game on a highlights reel.
That's a good point.
We know we beat them this season. Yeah. We know we beat Jose. They sort of glossed over that a little bit. I thought the next game is Jose's last team, Manchester United. And then it's like, just goes dark and it comes back. They lost to United. And that was it.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that'd be good. I was expecting a highlights package. You don't see any of the dressing room stuff from that game, do you?
No, I don't think United have said you can come anywhere near us with them cameras.
Maybe it was Old Trafford, wasn't it?
You can use the game footage, but you ain't coming through that door.
That makes sense. Yeah, because if you get, if there's some scuffle and there's Jose getting a, you know, pizzas thrown at him or whatever, we don't want that. But it is very interesting, and you do have to have a little bit of respect for Tottenham are one of those teams I just don't care about. Like, they don't raise my blood pressure. I'm not, they're not, they're almost just like neutral, just a glass of water of a team. Yeah. But the fact that they've not won a, you know, they're the only team who's hung around the top four in the last 10 years that haven't won anything.
They're the only team that finished third in a 2-0 race.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Leicester have come into the top four. They've won the Premier League. City and Liverpool have obviously won stuff. Chelsea have won stuff. Even United have won stuff. They have done a good job of consistently getting a lot of points.
Even that eighth place team, Arsenal,
never fucking winning out. No other team has managed to do that.
Do you know what? I'm a bit disappointed though.
I'm hoping,
I don't know how it pans out or anything, but I'm hoping we do see a bit of feistiness from Jose.
Oh, we've got to see some.
Like,
do
you know, like, you probably, like, the
have
old
they gone class, past the old, January yet?
We need to get him into full John Sitting mode. Yeah, we'll bring your dinner with you. We'll have a fucking right old sort out here.
I want to see the ins and outs bit, because that's the interesting bit for me.
Yeah, me too.
Because he gets rid of Eriksen, which for me is, you know.
I thought Eriksen didn't come across very well from the first.
No, Eriksen was like, you're going to say that. Everyone talks about me and it's all false.
Yeah, I'm just treated like an asset, and you know, they treat me. I think, you know, about 100k a week, it's like whinging.
Yeah, so Eriksen, and I want to see them when he brings in a couple of players in general.
And I want to see him in the park throwing tennis balls to Tanguy and Ndombele trying to get him fit. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Some of the breaking lockdown to play footy in a park with a professional footballer. The disrespect he showed him there. He's like, oh, he's not fit. Don't play him then. It's your fault he's not fit. You're his manager. Ridiculous.
Jose,
they were in the park running around cones.
What's going to make this great? You don't want to see Jose be nice to people.
No, I want to see him disrespecting people and get shouted at.
Threatening people. Awful. Throwing him under the bus like he did with everywhere he's ever gone. Yeah. That's the real box office Jose that we want.
Yeah. You want to see him explode. And we know he had a problem with Aurier because he's about to go, or he has left. And Ndombele because he's like, he's a fat lad and he ain't playing for me. He's like, you're his manager. Stop him being fat for a bit. Oh, I'm so excited for that. Just falling out with people. But yeah, it's a good start. Let's go back to a bit of transfers before we go.
Go on then.
We've got Upamecano on the radar.
Upamecano.
He's on the radar. Talks of United being interested in him for about 37.5 million, which by all accounts isn't going to be enough to sign him.
No.
We've seen
the slightest.
He's got apparently he's got a release clause that is activated next summer, that, you know, is around 50 million or 45 million. So people are saying it rumoured that somewhere around 50 to 55 million would be enough to get him this summer. He's just signed a new contract this summer.
Yeah, it wasn't long ago.
Why didn't we sign him before that? Why are we Fellainiing it again?
I don't know.
Fellainiing it. I don't know. Nothing about what we do in the transfer market and our approach to transfer off makes a lot of sense to me. Don't know a lot about him, but he's obviously a good player. And I think if you got him, then all of a sudden your transfer summer is looking a lot brighter than it did a few weeks ago, because we've all said we need another option at centre back. Yeah, if you look here, we get Upamecano and we get, obviously, we've got Van de Beek, looks pretty much done. And one other. Then that's a decent summer, and that's a summer I think we all expected certainly everyone sat here, and from what we gathered from people we spoke to who know a lot more about the situation than we do, was that three signings was roughly what most people say. Yeah. James Cooper sort of said that, and that would make sense because it has gone proper cold on the Sancho front.
It seems to be that United have almost like a three signing policy now, isn't it? Like James, Wan-Bissaka, Maguire,
Fred, Delow,
Grant.
Do you reckon Grant was like, we've signed two, we need a third.
Yeah.
Quick.
Have you got anyone who's old as shit and will never play for us? Yeah, Lee Grant.
Sorry, Lee.
I said old as shit. Old and shit. He's old as shit.
That's fine. He will be on MUTV pretty soon one day as a legend, as a club legend.
Yeah, wearing that like the black polo shirt where it's bursting at the seams because they put a bit of weight on. So it seems as though you can't expect more than three signings. Certainly not three starting 11 signings. Chelsea have gone mad, which has sort of heightened the, I guess, envy and jealousy and expectation. You look across at in league terms at what our rivals are doing, certainly our points rivals in Chelsea, and they've gone for it in a way that we haven't seen United do since, what was it, Tevez? Who else did we get that year? Tevez.
Well, we got Tevez, we got Hargreaves, we got Nani, we got Anderson. Yeah. We did go for it under Van Gaal one summer, though.
Yeah, we did.
When we got, I think, Blin, Shaw, Falcao, and Di Maria was all one summer.
Yeah. So we haven't. Serves. But in terms of money spent, Falcao was free. But the rest of them cost money. I understand that, but we've never seen United.
No, I get where you're coming from. Certainly not recently.
Certainly not recently.
That's proper.
Yeah. So the idea that we were going to get any more than three was always seemed unlikely. But for a long time, the whole Sancho stuff got to a point where advanced talks are being made and then dead. Quiet. So then now this transfer seems to have lifted the mood slightly, doesn't it?
It started to feel like the Mourinho summer when he signed Fred Grand Delow. That's what it kind of felt like. We're not going to get anyone here. Mm. You know, we're going to, you know, we'll maybe pick up a, you know, a reserve left back or something like that, and that'll be it. And we'll just kind of go, we're going to blame
coronavirus. Or a 19-year-old centre back.
Yeah, we're going to blame coronavirus, and that'll be it. And then Ollie will get thrown under the bus by Christmas, and that'll be it. That's the project done and dusted. We're going to need to start.
Yeah, we see it coming.
That was the feeling that everyone was getting. But the Van der Beek one, just that one signing coming in, everyone's kind of gone, okay, we're a bit slow, which we know United have been for a long time now. We've not been quick in the transfer market, but we've got someone, and we might get now the Upamecano if we get him. I still think there'll be a Grealish. If we don't get Sancho, I think Grealish will push for that as well. I still think we'll look at someone like that. I think that we need someone else that'll fit in and is an option across that front line, and I think that Grealish kind of does both jobs.
Yeah,
I think he
can play out wide as well.
Plays out wide.
I think he'd be a great signing.
Alternative to Sancho, which I don't think you can have, because the players have been linked to, even like,
there's no one in the world that fits the criteria that Sancho occupies either, is there? For his age, his output, his speed, his trickery, like there's no one who can get that many assists and that many goals and is 21 and has done it in a top league. There is no one else in the world that ticks all the boxes that Sancho ticks, and is English, and knows Manchester. It doesn't exist. Even if you're taking away some of the big criteria, there isn't. If you go down the sort of the English side, which United seem to want, there's no one. Grealish, I suppose, is that he's not as quick. He doesn't get as many goals as assists, but he sort of knows. He's English and he's young. Like, but no one sort of does both in terms of quality and. Just on a personal level, he knows all the lads, he's friends with people, he's a great age, all that sort of stuff. He's the only one who exists like that,
Yeah, so if we don't get Sancho, I think that the worry was that we were going to get no one. Or we were going to panic and get Kingsley Coman on loan and it might not work out. Or we're going to spend 150 million on Dembele from Barcelona and it's just not going to work.
I don't want him.
You know, I don't think we wanted that. But just the Van der Beek signing, the links to a centre-half, I think that is a clear thing that he wants now. I think there's definitely another centre-half in there. It looks better. I don't think United are going to end this summer with a squad that should compete for the league. But it's going to be if it ended right now with Van der Beek, the squad is better than it was last year, which is the first time in 3 years.
The good thing as well about those signings is Van der Beek's got, you know, he's only 23, got levels to go. You mentioned Upamecano, he's obviously a 21.
Which for a centre back, you might as well be 17. Exactly. Like, that's ludicrously young for a centre back.
So you've got, you know, players which sort of fit that thing of, you know, me and you were talking the other day about it, you know, United in 3 or 4 years time can have practically the same team other than maybe Matic that we've got now, and they'll be a little bit better because we've all got, you know, players that, even the likes of Pogba's only 27, he's not like old or, you know, in terms of footballing terms, and the likes of Mason, Martial, Rashford are all going to get better in my opinion. You'd expect them, especially Mason, he expects him to, you know, go up a couple of levels. Wan-Bissaka, you know, it's basically that team is a young team. So hopefully if we get those type of players, or and eventually, it might not be this summer, but I think eventually we'll get Sancho, who again fits that criteria, being young, then we've all said we expect a title challenge, a proper one, in a couple of years, and that would happen.
Either the next season or the season after.
And that would happen if you get those types of players in, because as long as you don't lose anyone massive, like, you know, Pogba stays or whatever, your team improves, they all get a little bit more experience, and then...
And again, we're talking about with Karl Anka, weren't we, last week, where he was saying there are, it's a common theme in American sports, but people have like a title challenge in their head, like a timeline, whereas... You know, Klopp isn't going to be at Liverpool forever. Pep isn't going to be at City forever. They've got the likes of Aguero and, you know, City have got quite a lot of older players.
Yeah.
And then Liverpool have got players in Salah and Mane who may not stick around. Firmino, who doesn't have the output they did a couple of seasons ago. Well, yeah, but you know what I'm saying? He's declining in his output.
And that
might be a perfect time for United to go for that.
Madrid and Barca, with everything that's going on in La Liga, there's going to be some money put behind them, and that's got... I think that's got Van Dijk.
Maybe £700 million if City get out.
Exactly. And that's got, I think that's got Van Dijk all over it as well. Yeah. I think that Ramos retiring and Pique both retiring at the same time. That's got Van Dijk going to one of them at some point.
Or Laporte even as well.
Or Laporte for ridiculous money. They're going to be the links that happen. That's what happened with United for years. You know, that's what happened with Ronaldo, is that he got to a certain level. And then they're always going to come sniffing around.
That's the thing,
like that. And it's how you can replace them and whether they do. And that's when you have to jump on that transition period, you know, and that's what United need to do in the next couple of years. The Pogba thing, you know, we did mention it, that signing him to a new deal isn't a new signing, because it's definitely not. But I still think in the back of everyone's mind, he was always going to go either this summer or the summer after. But if he signs a deal this year, that's him through this period, then that's him for the next couple of years.
I think all he's got to get around. I mean, I know a lot of people say, well, it's because like Real Madrid or Barcelona or Juventus and haven't been able to spend the money or pay the money that United want for Pogba. But I think Ole needs to get more credit for the way he's handled some of these players. You know, we talked about Jose earlier. When Jose left, you know, Martial was disillusioned. Rashford wasn't firing on all cylinders. Pogba wanted out.
Luke Shaw
just, you know, gone to the dogs. I mean, it was a mess. Yeah. And it was. And I think part of the thing is, problem was, Ole came in, we won 12 out of 13. Everyone went, oh, he's fixed everything. So when we struggled, he started getting a lot of stick. But I think if you look at what he's done since he's been at Manchester United as manager, whether that's caretaker's permanent, he's sorted out so many of the issues with these players. You know, we almost swapped Martial for Willian. We almost, you know, Pogba almost.
Perisic,
exactly. You know, and these are players that potentially could be here for another 3 or 4 years at least and doing you know, great stuff at Manchester United. And I think Ollie's handled it well. Even Pogba, right up until lockdown, just before the Spurs game, I saw so many United fans, some United fans who I respect, going, get rid of Pogba, get rid of him. It literally took a cameo against Spurs, so everyone's going, actually.
That's good, actually.
We do need him.
He's really good
at he's actually very talented, and we need him. And I only deserve credit for that, because there's so much pressure on him, and, you know, he was struggling, we missed Pogba, and he could have easily gone, you know, we're going to let Paul go, but he's convinced him to stay, however he's done it, and he's getting a tune out of him, and that's not, you know, that shouldn't be dismissed.
Just before we go, I want to talk a little bit about one of the sort of nuances of the Van der Beek deal. One of the things that shocked everyone, and has shocked me in a good way, but also I'm slightly concerned or dubious, the speed at which we got this deal done, literally 24 hours basically, wasn't it, from concrete links being established to Van der Beek to it's done. I want to talk about a little bit about, you know, are you surprised that United have done that? Because we've notoriously dragged our heels with every deal. There were talks that we didn't even negotiate for him. We literally said, what do you want? 40 million. Okay, here you go. Also, the way that football transfers are reported now, Jay, obviously you've got a journalism background and you are sort of our expert in that regard. Fabrizio Romano has come in and sort of taken the world by storm, certainly the transfer world by storm in the last 12 to 18 months. He's gone from being sort of specialist in Italy to being the number one authority on transfers in Europe and across the world. And British journalism, the sort of long-standing history of British journalism, has not kept up with that, the sort of commodification and concentration of journalism to I am a transfer specialist, has not kept up at all. When is the last time a British journalist broke a story about Manchester United? There were literally reports, Simon Peach, Simon Stone, Laurie Whitwell, whom I respect all of them and think they're all very good, were literally tweeting stuff like, as reported in other sources, Van der Beek is close. Like, transfers have become their own beast under the in the internet. We know from the job we do that nothing gets views, nothing gets interest like transfers from us, from the people at home. Transfers are the thing. They are the magic when it comes to football. Certainly in the off season, like between seasons. Are you happy with the way that transfers are reported now? Do you like this I am a transfer journalist for Fabrizio Romano style, where he just goes for transfers and doesn't really do much else? Or do you sort of feel sorry for the older fashioned kind of, I write about everything and I ring Ed Woodward occasionally to see what's going on with transfers, traditional British style journalism? Do you think that's slipping away a little bit in this sort of internet 280 characters of here's what's happening with the transfers and transfers only?
I think, yeah, I get where you're coming from, and we sort of, the sort of buzzword has become the Italian journalist. I've seen that used a lot, and they seem to have the finger on the pulse with transfers. But as we know from our conversations with Romano, and as you just said there, he focuses on transfers, where Simon Stone does a lot of reporting, a lot of different things. Laurie Whitwell covers all. I've seen bumped in at Laurie Whitwell at like under 23 games and stuff like that, where you never get Fabrizio Romano go out and watch his local team under 23s, I presume not anyway. So it is difficult for someone like, you know, Simon Stone or Sam Peach, or either, you know, the journalists who we rely upon, and who, you know, when they tweet, you think, oh yeah, he knows what he's talking about, to focus on transfers across the world, which is what Romano seems to do. He's more or less dedicated himself. And we know from our own conversations with him, you know, the first time we were messaging him, you know, I was getting replies at 4 a.m. There's an hour's time difference between where he is and where I am. So that's 5 a.m. for him.
Yeah.
And it's like, he just barely seems to sleep.
He said he sleeps from 6 a.m. till 11 a.m.
Yeah, and he just focuses on that. And it's difficult, you know. I'm good mates with Craig Norwood, who used to be the go-to guy for transfers for United. And that was, you know, he was always dead reliable. And he just focused on United, though. He didn't have, like, loads of stories about Chelsea and Chelsea or Liverpool, whatever. He was just
AC Milan or...
He had his connections and he had his sources that were ultra-reliable. But he just focused on United. And I don't think it's that much of a shame, because I think that what it has done, and the sort of the positive you've got from all of this, is you know who you can trust, you know who you can rely upon. We know there's certain journalists that if they tweet, you know, it's sunny outside, you take your umbrella, that whole thing, you know what I mean? Like, you just think, all right, okay, yeah, whatever. Whereas there are journalists like Romano, like others, especially some of the German journalists, where you go, okay, now there's something in that.
Yeah,
now,
and the tier, now and as we allude to, obviously, in the tier one transfer podcast, the tier system that came from Reddit has been a massive thing in that. But do you think, Alex, that it is, and I don't necessarily think this, but it's just struck me in the last couple of weeks, like you see like James Ducker or you know, Henry Winter commenting about transfers, talking, doing sort of opinion pieces on players and this sort of thing. It's, well, Romano had the story first. Like the internet and the social media way that Romano has so fine-tuned his journalistic career into just transfers. Do you think that is a good thing? Do you think it is something
as a bit more
putting a strain pressure on everyone else? Yeah,
as a philosophical way of looking at football in general, I think that there's a younger element of fans that have grown up in this FIFA Ultimate Team state, in this Ultimate Team kind of way that football is about the players moving in between the clubs, and that's what, and you know, having this star-studded team is what you want, and that's where the transfer side of it's come in. It's not about the Saturday watching the football. It's about the summer's almost more interesting to most people than the football is, which is a shame in some way. But if that's how football's gone, that's how football's gone. It doesn't seem that that's the way with the British journalists. There isn't this concrete. When you see something from even, like you said, the respected ones, you still go, I don't really believe you. You know, I don't, you know, any paper says United are linked to him, I kind of just go, you know, and I said, I went away this weekend and I didn't have my phone on for most of it. And my mate would say, oh, Sancho to United for this deal, and I can tell I've been doing this for too long, because the first thing I was, well, what's the source?
I don't
believe for most of the things that get said now. You're like, it's not true. I don't think it's true. But then Romano does it, and usually he's right.
It's like one of the reasons we do the Tier 1 podcast, where we go through the Tier 1 news. We go, me and Ronaldo go through it. It's because there is like almost that lead table now, and people do like have the journalist day rate. We do it ourselves, as I mentioned earlier. And, you know, it seems like a good idea to sort of put that into a pocket and go, right, okay, what's Romano saying? What's Ducker saying? What's some of the ones that, you know, Winner, what's he saying? What's James Cooper saying? And some of them, like James Cooper, isn't the type who's going to go, well, I've got a source here who's going to... but he knows, like, he'll have connections and he'll know when something is done. So you can rely on him. He doesn't speculate. He doesn't go, well, I'm here in one hand, this might happen. But, you know, he's reliable because he deals with pretty much facts. Yeah. So that's why we like him. And, you know, he's not always the first to break a story, but he can confirm it. And I think that's the sort of thing is now you've got these journalists who are more reliable. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I get where you're coming from.
I know you're not saying it's a bad thing.
And I know from your own, you know, our own conversations, you don't. But it, just from what we do here, it's frustrating because we could spend like, if we spent, say, a week doing a documentary on the 68 team that was absolutely, you know, we thought was the best thing we did. And we interviewed Alex Stepney. We'd actually done something similar on full-time, when we were full-time Devils. And it does like 5,000 views. And then you go, oh, here's a story, Sanchez might be coming, and it does like 50,000. And you think, but it's the nature of the beast, you know. And I get it. And, you know, it's like people get excited and they want to see these players and they want to hear that they're coming to your club. And that's the way it works. So, you know, whilst it is a little bit deflating at times, it's you know, I think it is a positive in many ways.
And personally, I think the, not to call out any specific outlets, but as we all know, there are plenty of outlets that literally just peddle crap.
Knowingly
doing it, only reporting on just false rubbish. This transfer's happening. United want this player, this player, this player, this player.
You know, it's how it's like an echo chamber as well. Like, because you do the news as well in the morning, and you'll see a story in, like, I don't know, let's say you see it in the Express, and you'll click on it. You'll go, you know, United are going to buy Kante tomorrow. You're like, fucking hell, really? And then it'll go as reported in the Mail, in the Express article with a link. Then you click on the Mail, and it'll go as was reported in the Mirror. Then you click on the Mirror link, and it'll lead back to
some source in France that you've never heard of.
And it'll be like, oh, so actually,
and as you know, Jay, that. That was never the case. You would never have one newspaper using another newspaper as their source for something. Because why don't you do your own journalism? Like, and now that's, again...
And like, you're going back to the... You spoke to me about how I was a journalist. You know, I'm a journalist and that background. I obviously worked in radio. But it was like, if you read something and in a paper, a lot of the time when we used to get our news, we get down from what's called the wires from IRN, people like that, where it come down like, you know, there's been a shooting or whatever, because I used to do a lot of news, not just sport. Then you get it verified. So I'd ring Greater Manchester Police, or I'd ring the root of the source.
You don't need to do
that. I don't just go, oh, well, I've read it on Twitter. Right, let's run it. Let's on our bulletin, oh, as being reported by, you know, Sexy Marshall 95 says that United have just signed.
And hopefully with all this, and I think the last couple of summers have kind of, I mean, I think Dom did we did a graphic last year, and it was just all the players that United got linked to, and it was literally 200 plus players that United got linked to in one summer. I think maybe that's starting to come, or at least in our eyes, down, because anything that's linked to in these sources just doesn't gather any steam anymore.
Because
and
I think
it feels like there is the credibility is you're starting to see that again, and it's going away from the newspapers. It's certain journalists.
I feel for some of these papers, I know a lot of local reporters, I know I keep slagging off the MEN, but some of the news reporters I know at the MEN are very good reporters. I just think their football coverage is absolute garbage. And I know there's pressure on them. They get put on pressure, under pressure, because it's like they could spend all day, you know, Neil Keeling, who's one of the greatest reporters I know, he covers crime. You know, he goes round to the police station and literally speaks to policemen about the crime stories on his patch. He's so reliable. But, you know, reporters now are under pressure where it's like they don't want that, you know, nuanced article that's taking you all day to work on. They want a clickbait article that brings
gives
them
a tweet.
Because they've got pressures of money and financial pressures and stuff. So it is a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy that you have to do that.
One thing we saw under with the internet, as you know, anyone who's 17 or under might not remember any of this, but the initial or the last 10 years of broadband and newspapers and media outlets altogether have struggled to get their content to make the money it did in print. Online. And one of the ways they got around that, or the one of the ways that has been probably the most common way of getting clicks and likes, is put Man United in every article, get as many clubs as you can so we can get as many clicks as possible, which has led to in my eyes a massive decline in reliability from even look at Sky Sports as an example of that. They used to be the sort of one of the up there with BBC as if they say it's happening. Now they, you know,
do you know what the new,
you barely
the new,
believe
the new,
anything
the
they
new
say
sort of boss thing to do is
You'll
get, say you get Sky Sports as an example. You get a guy on Sky Sports. Let's say you had Paul Merson on. Paul Merson says, I think United should sign Lewandowski. And then you'll have an article that says, United urge to sign Lewandowski. And it's actually an article based on one of their presenters who's come out with this nonsense that's never going to happen. And they'll do an article on it. And then others, like we've said, will pick up on it. And it'll be like, United links to Lewandowski. And how are you linked? And you actually, oh, they're urged. Oh, are we urged? Oh, because some presenter during a 10-minute ramble about nonsense and say, he'd be a good player.
He said he's the best striker in the world.
Yeah, many United should get him. But, and then it's like, you know, that becomes a story in several newspapers.
Yeah, exactly. And then newspapers jump on that and say, well, they've been urged to. Well, no, he's not. That's not a...
And I think now as a reaction to that, we are seeing this sort of filtration of reliability to the people who... don't talk shit. It's hopefully this is the way the internet is going, where you have, especially social media, you have a pool of people you can choose from. You like this person, this person, this person, this person. And people will realise, and people are realising, you know, the fact that a year ago Fabrizio Romano had 200,000 followers, he's got 1.5 million. When you did the interview with Henry Winter, Fabrizio Romano didn't have a million followers, and Winter did. Now Fabrizio Romano's got 1.5 million. So in 2 months, he's got 500,000 followers because this is the thing. People will find the individuals that do the work that they like. And you know, that may be a change to the established way of doing things, but it's going to bring of reliability.
It's amazing that someone doing something right and just only putting out, this is what I know and this is the truth, is working for him. And that's the good thing to see, is that someone... who is pushing this agenda, he's not an agenda, but he's pushing this, I'm only going to tweet what I know and what I know is right, and this is what's going to happen. And that's worked for him for the past 12 months.
Yeah.
And now he's growing into the stature it is, and that's how journalism should be, is that you're going to put the right things, and then people go...
It's just reminding me of something, actually. Me and talking about Craig, and we were talking about Alderweireld earlier. I remember me and Craig used to do the Red Mancunian podcast. Yeah, me and Craig used to do the Red Mancunian podcast. And once the Daily Star ran a story saying, United urged not to sign Alderweireld. And it was off the Red Mancunian, it's Daily Star, which is like, you know, it's not exactly elite. And it was me and Craig on the podcast talking about how all we'd said was Alderweireld is like, isn't he pushing 30? I don't know if we should get him. And they'd ran a story on it. It was like,
and that's the thing. That...
I'm reading myself in a newspaper just on two mates, which it was, our podcast was just two mates, it wasn't like professional, just chatting. And it was just madness.
Now that, you know, a newspaper, the print media is slowing down as you would expect it to, there maybe hopefully isn't the, we have to fill 60 pages or 40 pages a day no matter what. Maybe now they can put out less stories that are guaranteed to get more views because they have a reliability to them rather than just, we have to fill the paper no matter what. So we'll hopefully see that. Bit of a reflective...
Can we do Wally of the Week before we wrap up?
Oh, you're gonna...
Can we what?
Mine,
do Wally of the Week.
Yeah, let's do Wally of the Week. Go on.
You're
going to
nip mine. So just
no, go on. You can go first.
Go on,
ladies
then.
First.
We'll go for it. We'll go for Danny Murphy. I'm going to go for Danny Murphy.
So you have Danny Murphy, right? You have him, and I'll do a different one.
What is the one?
So Danny Murphy, I mean, you did the legwork for the tweet that I wanted to put out. Because
I'm
Murphy,
the Romano and you're the Dave McDonald.
So Danny Murphy said, I see Van der Beek coming in, that means Pogba's got to go. That was his statement yesterday.
And
okay. Why would you have two attacking... You've got two great attacking midfielders. Why would you sign another one for 40 million? And then what was it?
Two weeks ago,
he put out... They did an article on it, saying United aren't good enough because the squad depth isn't right. And you just kind of go...
Over-reliant. He literally joined... When we got over-reliant. Over-reliant. Bruno and that look leggy. They need to buy someone. And then when we do, he's like, well, you've got to get rid of one of them.
And
it doesn't make any sense.
And this is the other thing, that this whole thing about reliability, I think people are starting to figure out that even though you play professional football, it means you know nothing.
Do you know what
it means? That it means whatever you say doesn't mean that it's right, which I think people used to think that. You know, if he's played professional football for Liverpool,
the Scousers,
you should know a bit about football.
Yeah,
and I think that that's been the case.
You know, it's not even that. I think a lot of it, and I used to love talk sport. I did when I was younger. Yeah. I used to love it. I've been on it a few times with Goldstein and people like that. But it just seems to have gone massively down the clickbait route to the point when they have callers in it, you see them clipping up these callers and putting them on the Twitter and we had this caller in the other day I think it's borderline sometimes. You've got mentally ill people on there. I don't use that term line. I'm not belittling the mental illness, but it does sound to me like when I listen to it, I think that guy's not well.
Well, they had five people on that said that Messi isn't good enough for the Premier League, and you just kind of go in.
But we do it ourselves. We could go through all our comments and find like the most ridiculous ones, and then clip that up into a video and go, oh, you know, United fans says that we need to sell Rashford and Martial. You know, you will get outrageous opinions. You will get people that are just taking the piss. And they seem to have just gone down that route and have almost forgone the idea of like a proper debate about serious issues, and just gone, oh, you know what? We've got Dave from Leicester who says that fucking City.
Says his mum should be playing for Barcelona. Yeah,
and they'll put him on.
No, she shouldn't. Yeah. How old is she? 58. She's too old for Barcelona. Like, taking seriously these loot. How much does she weigh?
And this may have been
and it's ridiculous stuff of, like...
It's not, you know, he's obviously...
Acting as though every opinion, no matter who it's from, is...
And this might have been the way they clipped it, because I only watched a clip of it. But it didn't sound like anyone kind of went, you're talking nonsense. You know, in these kind of shows, if someone came out with that kind of comment, surely someone in that studio, whoever he's on with, should go, yeah, but...
They used to have a lot. Sometimes you would listen to just two presenters arguing, which wasn't that great in itself, but they at least used to have some sort of check of
surely they go. But you don't think we need squad depth? You know, when without someone saying that.
Like, and it undermines you because, like, years ago, when it used to be like Asia Dorian, people like that, he used to do like the Daily Arsenal with minor Arsenal fans, and it was quite funny because he'd do that, and then sometimes he'd talk about serious stuff. So you could sort of see that, you know, he might have a point when he'd say things like, "Oh, Drogba's better than Henry," or whatever. You'd be like, oh, "It's quite." But when you've just got a stream of nonsense, then it's just like, "Oh, I'll tell you what, you know, fucking Scott McTominay is better than Messi." It's just like you're never gonna get sort of into this where you think, oh, what? I can't believe you're saying that, because you think, well, they just put the time. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'll go with, you know, Mickey Gray's been doing it today. So I just go with Talk Sport as well.
There's our Wallies of the Week this week. Right, should we call it a day there?
Yes.
That's been a lovely podcast.
Yeah.
We didn't get heated this time. We didn't have a row.
We had a row about Talk Sport instead. but yeah, let us know what you think to this deal of Van der Beek. Is there part of you that sort of... suspicious almost of how quick this deal came together? Is it a strange removal and separation of United's normal transfer?
Do you know why it came down really quick?
Here we go.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because the greatest goalkeeper Manchester United have ever had.
Van der Sar.
There you go.
Van der Sar.
Undisputed, the greatest goalkeeper that ever put goals on for Manchester United.
Greatest transfer director.
Anyone else who says otherwise is completely fucking stupid.
Right, that's going to be all from us. Like I said, let us know what you think of this transfer in the comments. Let us know whether you think this is going to be the match that lights the bonfire of transfers at Old Trafford. It looks like United are targeting a centre-back, potentially another centre-mid, and obviously Jadon Sancho is on the list as well. Let us know what you think in the comments below. Thanks very much, lads. It's been a fun podcast today, hasn't it? Very enjoyable. And not been interrupted by two parcels at all, so you won't even notice the cuts
there.
Did you
get your cream, by the way?
Yeah, I got my cream.
Right, good.
It's less red now, anyway.
All right.
So,
told you, we've all been there.
Yeah, red flag flying high. Right, that's going to be all from us. See you in a bit.
Sports Social Podcast Network.